Inside the Thoughts Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse MCLA Podcast, the Championship Edition. I am Terry Foy, joined as always by David Franklin, and fans of this podcast, loyal listeners of this podcast, will find this to be a very familiar scene as we welcome back both head coaches of championship teams here shortly, Pete Moosbrugger of the St. Thomas Tommies and Alex Smith of the Colorado State Rams. David, you were in Greenville, South Carolina to watch these two teams run to perfection, and I suppose, you know, to tip things off, what impressed you most about each team as they were able to do, you know, what is a very rare feat in the MCLA?
Absolutely. You want to know what? To be honest with you, the thing that impressed me most is both teams' ability to completely replicate exactly what they did last year in order to be successful this year. Colorado State is all about team communication, playing really, really tight shutdown defense, and utilizing their two-goalie system to perfection. And St. Thomas, who is also, you know, using a two-goalie system this season, kind of in a different way than the Rams, also worked that within their tournament scheme, also went up against a lot of familiar foes in order to get to the championship, and then, of course, faced one in the championship game. And defensive communication, good shot selection, working things in transition, that's how these teams win games. They're very, very well-composed, talented student-athletes that know what their opponent's strengths are, capitalize on that, and, you know, two perfect seasons and two perfect champions once again.
One of the things that I think is so cool and unique about this tournament is you know, kind of the festival environment, and I think for, you know, teams, players, participants, fans that hadn't been there before, you know, it does, and I'll include myself in that, this is all based on perception, but, you know, it does come out as a, you know, really fun environment, something to be a part of. And I think that, you know, that coupled with kind of putting together a special season and getting there for the first time as your team, with your team is a really kind of special feat. What did you see out of the first year participants, you know, teams like Oregon State and Purdue, just in terms of, you know, the kids kind of soaking it all in?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it's really funny that you bring that up because, you know, working at this tournament for the past 3 years, working this tournament for the past 3 years with a guy like John Robinette, who is, of course, the head coach at Fort Lewis when I played in this tournament, you know, I was a player, he was a coach, you know, Emory Fort Lewis, it was both our first trips to the MCLA tournament, kind of similar to that of a Division II matchup between Palm Beach Atlantic and Indiana Tech. So at the Division I level, Oregon State played really, really well. You know, they had a lead on UCSB at times. Again, they've had big wins over the course of the season against Sonoma and Oregon, so they know how to beat the big boys. You know, so they competed well, and UCSB just kind of pulled away at the right time and used their tournament and experience to their advantage. And Chad Stelling and his team definitely has a bright future as far as pertains to their talent on the field. You know, Purdue, they were essentially caught, like, you know, I mean, you look at the first round score. Colorado State had pulled some of their starters as early as toward the end of the first quarter. You know, Purdue was obviously a team that was pretty happy to be there. Again, they came out of nowhere. The GRLC, we were looking at Indiana, Wisconsin, Illinois, usually the contender that didn't even make their conference tournament. So Purdue, I think, you know, did the best they could. They definitely stayed composed and classy over the course of, you know, a 17-goal loss. And, you know, Trevor Rainville certainly has a lot to build on with his future with the Boilermakers. And then on the Division II side of things, kind of a different story. It wasn't just about making it there for the first time and being happy to be there. It was really about capitalizing for some teams. Indiana Tech and Palm Beach Atlantic, again, a 7-10 matchup, the exact sort of matchup that, you know, Emory and Fort Lewis had in 2007. Indiana Tech surprised people. I mean, they really did. This was a team that, you know, lost in the CCLA tournament. Palm Beach Atlantic had some really, really exciting players that had put up some big numbers that were expected to shine with the rest of some of the SCLC talent that made it into the field. But Indiana Tech, Dylan Johnston, The Nichter brothers, of course, head coach by Terry Nichter. They did a fantastic job and beat Palm Beach Atlantic 20-10, and then of course faced a very formidable opponent in Westminster in the very next round. Coast Guard, absolutely fantastic. You know, a 19-8 win as the 9 seed over an 8-season Sam Houston State, a first-year MCLA tournament team that's now making the transition to Division III. Gary Weller is a very good coach. He has very, very good student athletes, very good lacrosse players from all different parts of the country, and, you know, it's kind of sad that they're leaving the MCLA community because I would really like to have the opportunity to cover them more. But I really had a, you know, great experience getting better acquainted with that program. And then there's Liberty, and we'll talk about them as a first-year program next year when they transition into Division I and take that spot that Richmond's leaving behind. They were also incredible. I mean, they had the toughest draw as far as a 4-13 seed could ever kind of look in this tournament. You know how good North Dakota State is coming out of the UMLC. Liberty forced overtime. Derek Haywood scored the game-tying goal with only a few seconds left, scored the game winner in overtime. Their goaltending was fantastic. Of course, Ryan Miller and Joe Gargiulo are two of the best offensive talents that MCLA Division II has ever seen. And, you know, Miller has 3 more years ahead of him in this league. So, you know, the 12-11 win in overtime over North Dakota State was pretty impressive. And Grove City was back in the tournament for the first time since 2010. And, of course, Andy Stimmel got Coach of the Year, so congratulations to them. And then Liberty, I mean, yes, again, they forced overtime on St. Thomas. I mean, you know, they were one goal away from making it to the championship game and doing something that, you know, an SCLC team had never done before. And I think that Kyle McQuillan's squad can really maybe attempt that feat again at the Division I level in years to come.
All right, well, Dave, let's go ahead and move on and bring in the coaching so they talk about their team's run to a national championship. And the Inside Lacrosse MCLA podcast continues with Coach Pete Moosbrugger, whose team completed an undefeated Division II MCLA championship season. And, you know, Coach, this is not necessarily totally uncharted territory for you after your team went undefeated and won it all in 2010. And I think that, you know, one of the things that sports fans, you know, all across the landscape like to do when teams find themselves in this situation is, you know, compare. How do they stack up historically? That sort of thing. You know, what about this 2013 season was reminiscent of the 2010 season, and kind of how do you think they stack up in terms of, you know, maybe kind of who would win in a fantasy matchup, that sort of thing?
Yep. I think what was very similar was we, you know, this team is built on strong defensive play and really where we do our hard work is with our midfield group. And I think that's where the two teams are very similar. We're about as deep as, you know, we're much deeper now than we were then. So I think that's what makes this team unique versus the 2010 season is the amount of athletes and now veteran players that we have at our midfield spot. But as well as our defensemen, you know, we had Derek Mahalski on that team, and we had, and then we had Ben Vasco on this team. You know, two great leaders that, you know, are really on the field, showing the way, being able to help get everyone in the right position to make sure we're in the right defenses at the right times. And then again, our midfielders just taking over the game when we needed them.
Coach, we've spent so much time ever since we met in this juncture covering the league in 2011 talking about Will Hurstman. Similar to you, a two-sport athlete at St. Thomas, football and lacrosse. We talked about him very early in the year when he had to take a step back away from the football team, had Lyme disease, had to watch the Division III football championship to the stands, was expected to make a late entry into your season, actually was able to get in there early in a limited sense, and got to the MCLA tournament, had a sore knee, sat out against DePaul, and rightfully so, and then kind of went on to have a pretty good run, scored the game winner in overtime against Liberty, and then he injures his hamstring pretty early in the game against Westminster. I mean, what do you have to say about this kid, his heart, his dedication, his ability to, you know, battle fatigue and set back, and, you know, what's his status as far as, you know, next year in terms of both football and lacrosse?
Well, Will Hurstman, we are very blessed to have a player like him. He's number one, comes from a great family, the Hurstman family. There's a reason why Will is who he is. His parents demand a lot of him, and his mom is the first one to probably tell him to get on the field and suck it up. But they got a strong family and a family that really backs him, really caring family. You know, and I think that that's what's, you know, they've built that character that Will has, and I really feel for Will. this has been a trying year for him. You know, just to all of a sudden find out, spend months trying to figure out what's wrong and spending weeks in the hospital to find out it's Lyme's disease, and he had to change his diet. He's now on a completely gluten-free diet, so he's kind of had to change the way he lives his life. And then beyond that, the recovery time, and it's, you know, he probably, I don't say shouldn't have been playing, but it was very difficult for him to get to what we would consider 100% playing time, playing ability. We really tailored his play back in the beginning, just to ensure that we were doing the right thing for him as a person, to make sure that he's going to live a quality life, you know, for a very long time, and make sure that lacrosse wasn't above his health. You know, and so he sits out the national championship game for football, works his butt off, you know, really changes everything, gets back into the season, just struggling with just minor things. And there's no major injury. It's just the things that your body goes through as it's trying to build itself back up. We did sit him in the beginning round of the game. It was just that he had knee soreness and hip soreness and the things I probably have now just walking around. And then he scores the game winner, and I just felt so good for him. It was kind of the icing on the cake for everything he's gone through, and, you know, pick up that ball in the midline and run and put that past the goalie's ear. It was just like, you know, you could tell just the satisfaction and knowing that, you know, everything he's gone through at that point was worth it. And I really felt from the championship game when he came limping off that field, that was tough, because all of a sudden we'd just gone from this, he was just great, you know, he just, the icing on the cake, and now, man, it just, you know, another setback. Now, it wasn't a big injury. It's a pulled hamstring. You can't finish the game. There's going to be no implications for him missing football next year in lacrosse. But I think he really needs the summer just to get away from athletics, get rest, and just get his body, you know, back to normal. But he's well on his way, and I'm, you know, we're looking for another breakout season from Will in his senior year.
Coach, you've been using a two-goalie system for most of 2013 on a game-to-game basis. How did that change in the tournament, and, you know, how did Stephen Bangs kind of come in and earn a start in a full-game performance in the championship?
That's a great question. We are very blessed this year to have both Stephen Bang and Ryan Zeilinger. Obviously, Ryan came off of last year, was a game MVP, and he's a tremendous, both of them are tremendous people and tremendous goaltenders, and it's rare we can be on a team where we had two starters. I mean, we came into the season it's a great problem to have, but it's something that we wanted to make sure that both of them, number one, Stephen's a senior, and we wanted to make sure that, you know, that he got playing time, but we also wanted to realize that Ryan's a tremendous goalie too. So as we sat down, it became a no-brainer. We didn't have a one and a two. We had two ones. So we just basically put together a game schedule for which they rotated. And then once we got into the playoffs, it just didn't make sense to have to go in a game rotation, because you can't assume a second game. So the decision was made was that Ryan would start the games and Stephen would play in the second half, gives them both an opportunity to help us win a championship. And as the tournament went on, Stephen just was playing better. And it was a very difficult situation to have the night before the game when we pulled the goalies into our rooms and said, hey, you know, Stephen's going to start for the championship game. And Ryan, being the true professional, he wasn't happy about it, but he accepted it. He could have gone the route of, you know, woe is me, and complained, and but he didn't. He accepted it. He understood that you know, the reasons were that, say, number one, Stephen's a senior, and any senior is going to fight even more because this is it. His back's against the wall, and the season's over. You know, he's not going to, you know, play competitive lacrosse again. But I mean, I think you know, as we look back at film, Stephen was just playing better. And that, in the end, you got to make those tough calls sometimes, and that was what we felt as a coaching staff, and moving forward. And I'm really proud of Stephen with how he, you know, played in the championship game, and even more proud of Ryan and how he handled not being able to play. So Ryan's our number one goalie moving into next year. Right now, he's the only goalie we have in our roster. So we're expecting great things from him.
Two similar teams won two similar championships and two similar perfect seasons and two similar two-goalie systems. As Colorado State, of course, has the two-goalie dynamic with Jack Reed and then Colton Fatzinger. But, you know, moving back to your feats, Coach, The Final Four was ultimately pretty remarkable. You know, what makes Westminster and Liberty such great opponents, and as Westminster, as both of them make the jump to Division I MCLA next year?
Well, I mean, it's unfortunate for us that both those teams have made the decision to go to Division I. I don't hide the fact that my number one goal is, you know, I'm the St. Thomas lacrosse coach, but my second thing is to be the spokesman for Division II. It's my opinion that there's no reason why we can't have an ultra competitive Division I and an ultra competitive Division II. And so it's frustrating for me when we got these top teams that moved to Division I. But I absolutely understand the reasons. You can't fault Westminster for wanting to go to Division I because you look at their conference, it's difficult. I think we didn't have it St. John's, we didn't have NDSU. Division I would probably be the better option. So I can't fault any team for making the move. They're doing what they feel is best for their program. You know, I really want to see, you know, two ultra competitive divisions, you know, that both garner the same respect, and teams want to stay and build that. And that's my mission. As an MCLA and UMLC administrator, while also being a St. Thomas coach. So, you know, that's what I'm hoping for the future. But Westminster, when you look at that team, well coached in every aspect of the game. You know, we knew this was going to be a four-quarter battle. You know, Mason, you know, he's going to have those guys ready to go. They're a blue-collar, hardworking team. We knew we had to get after every ground ball because I know they're going to be harping on them, and that was going to be key to their game. They're also a great riding team. They'll add two or three, maybe four more possessions in a game just by purely outworking you in the ride. So we prepared for those, and I thought we did a really good job of out-ground-balling them and getting after those two key aspects. Liberty was a complete surprise, and I'm not going to lie. I think we survived one in that one. I knew we were in trouble right off the bat when they went man up, and they moved the ball really well. We did everything we could to keep the ball out of them in the beginning. Luckily, they did not have a great answer to our zone, and that saved us. I played more zone in that game than I have in the 11 years I've coached lacrosse. So hats off to them. They put us in difficult defensive positions with a great offense. And they're going to be a team to be watching in Division I. It's unfortunate, again, that they're moving up. But I think that, you know, they've got a great future ahead of them.
With the Division I championship being a Colorado State matchup, was there any part of you that was hoping for a Tommy Johnny national title game?
Everyone asked me that question. You know, it for the state of Minnesota, that would have been awesome to ensure that trophy was coming back to our state where it belongs. We're really growing the sport of lacrosse, and the state has really embraced the sport. That said, I wouldn't have slept for two nights before that because it wouldn't spring. It's such a people. I don't people understand the how ingrained the Tommy Johnny rivalry is across every sport. You know, you just every sport, whether it be club or varsity, you're circling that date, and everyone's gonna is the schools are ramping up for it. So, it would have been a spirited game. It would have been, you know, there would have been a lot on the line, just, you know, from a pride standpoint. So, wouldn't have wanted to play just because I know how it just would have taken the emotion level to another heights. But, you know, my goal, and I kind of mentioned this before when I talked to other people, is when we played Westminster in our second game of the season in Vegas, before the game, Mason and I shook hands and said, hey, let's both play this when everything's on the line. And I said, absolutely. So, you know, we were kind of big fans of Westminster through the year and hoping they'd be there and hoping we'd be there. So the ultimate goal for me was to be ending the season with Mason and playing that team, as I think they're a phenomenal opponent. And I'm glad that's how it turned out. But it would have absolutely been an interesting game if it was a Tommy Johnny final. St. John's, by the way, I mean, they probably deserve to be in the championship game. They played a great game. You know, a couple overtime loss, but I was really impressed with how they played Westminster.
Coach Moose, you're a pretty classy and open guy. Take a moment to thank whoever you need, you know, your assistant coaches, your staff, your family, your seniors, anybody you want to talk about, you know, that helped you toward this incredible run.
Yeah, I think I've said a lot of my thank yous, but I think that there's a group of people that I think that don't get the recognition that they deserve, and this program, it doesn't get to where it's at this year or in the past, and that's my assistant coaches. I'm the head coach by name, but this thing is really run by myself and the five other coaches. We make every single decision together. I don't micromanage everybody. Everybody has a role on the team, and they have full reign to do whatever they want. Our offense doesn't do what it does without Coach Rob Horn. He demands perfection. He's critical of himself and what we're doing, and he's always demanding change on the offense, and his offense pushes our defense. So it's nice in practice that his offense is really forcing us to step our game up to keep up with him in practice. Brian Gross has been with me. Man, he's been with the program, played for me for 2 years now. He's been coaching ever since. He's been coaching our face-off guys, and he's another guy that's kind of taken over a lot of the riding and clearing stuff, and I'm completely indebted to the amount of time he takes away from his family to be part of this. Joe Turner and Barry Weintraub are new to the staff this year. I think they're kind of seeing what it takes to coach at the college level, even at the club level. They're still trying to find their way in the world professionally and coaching, but I'm really impressed with both those guys. They're going to have a great future in coaching, whatever they choose to do. I hope they stay with our program for a long time. But, those guys just don't get the recognition they deserve. I want to say publicly how much I truly appreciate the amount of time that they take away. They make very little money, but spend a lot of time from their family and friends and probably things they want to do off the field. So thank you very much to my coaches.
Well, Coach Moosberger, we thank you for your time. Congratulations again on the victory. And who knows, maybe this time next year we'll be talking to you on the same show.
I hope we are. We'll do everything we can to make that possible.
And the Inside Lacrosse MCLA podcast continues with Alex Smith, head coach of the Colorado State Rams, who finished the season MCLA Division I national champions yet again, 21-0, an undefeated season for the program, a rare feat at the MCLA level, the second undefeated coach we've had on the program. Remarkable, and among the more remarkable things about your run, Alex, to championship is, the teams that you beat along the way, particularly the last two teams that you beat in the MCLA tournament, both of them being conference foes. Brigham Young, your 9-7 winners over them in the semifinals, 7-2 victors over Colorado in the MCLA championship. What does it say about the RMLC that you guys had to beat two conference opponents in your last two games of the season?
Yeah, I think it says a lot. It's been pretty typical for BYU and CSU to be in the Final Four over the years, and we've really established a nice tradition in terms of the Rocky Mountain team being really successful at the national level. And for Colorado to make the jump that they did this year really says a lot about Coach Galvin and what they're doing down there. And, there's just so much good lacrosse happening out here in Colorado, in Utah, and in California in general, it allows us to get good kids who are committed to kind of making this more than just a club experience. And, I think that's really showing when three of our teams are at that, at that type of level, it's a pretty good accomplishment.
Alex, you have three amazing close defensemen. You have probably the nation's most underrated LSM going into next year, and obviously two goalies who split time pretty much almost every game. What is it like managing that caliber of defensive personnel?
Well, I'm really lucky to have those guys because they know each other so well. They're so smart. I think that's probably their best attribute is they're really able to make up, for some coaching deficiencies or any issues we have in terms of X's and O's. Those guys really know how to play well with each other. They complement each other so well. Hayden is such a great cover guy. And Tyler is a really good slide guy. And, Sully's just kind of going to shut people down. He's probably the smartest D guy in the country. And then you add Zach and Tim Miskowitz in there as our LSMs, who are super athletic, both of them, coming from really strong high school backgrounds and Division I backgrounds. It just allows us to do a lot of things. So, we're really lucky to have the D that we did have. And, a lot of times if teams were able to get something on us once, they weren't able to get it again. And I think that's the mark of a great defense. And it's all the credit to Coach T.W. Winston and those guys because they did a lot of great work.
Coach, earlier in the season, you said that the success of your team would be dictated by the leadership of your captains, and Austin Fisher went on to put together an impressive season career, winning a Player of the Year award along the way. What makes this kid so special?
You know, Austin was injured for basically the last month of the season, and it didn't allow him to be quite as dynamic athletically as he normally is. He's so fast, and he can change direction. He's a really great athlete, and he plays so hard. And he loves the game of lacrosse, and he loves the process of getting better and trying to figure out what's going to work well with his teammates. But, you know, honestly, one of the best things about Austin, you know, over the past 2 years especially, was that he just didn't – he wasn't so concerned with himself. You know, we don't have an offense that's designed around getting him goals. You know, he just ends up being the recipient of a lot of that stuff sometimes. And we don't ask him to carry the ball too much. We just want him to play within our system and be successful within the system. And I think when you have a player who's that good and that talented, who can buy into kind of the team concept of playing offensive lacrosse, then that's a special attribute for him. So, I mean, he's the complete package as an attackman. In terms of dodging and feeding and cheating and riding, you know, he's got all that. And then, you know, as a captain, he's awesome. He's a 2-year captain, which is really rare for us. So, you know, I couldn't be happier having coached Austin. He's a great kid, and he'll be a tough one to replace.
Alex, Austin wears the number 9 jersey for your team, and, you know, I had a chance to play this summer with your former teammate, best friend at Colorado State, who wore that same jersey. Tell us a little bit about your relationship with Jared Katz on kind of a future level, and from there expand on how the Ram all across alumni base is so important to your efforts.
Yeah, sure. You know, Jared was one of the first people I met here at CSU that was, you know, not someone I knew from high school or whatever, and we were roommates all the way through college. He's definitely a really good friend, and, you know, he's one of those kids that, you know, it'd be nice to be coaching with some players like him. He's fast. He can do it all as a midfielder. He's really a great player. And to see him doing what he's doing now on the international stage is awesome. You know, he moved to Israel a long time ago now, over 5 years ago, it seems like. So he's to be involved with lacrosse is really special, I know, for him, because, you know, he's someone who really takes the kind of the spirit of the game really seriously. He gets the he gets what the game is really about, and you know, I think he's very spiritually connected to the game. And then for him to be able to, you know, do that on the international stage is awesome. And I think that just shows kind of the love of lacrosse that our whole program has. And you know, we've been around since 1964, and we've got some really great alums who've reached back out to be a part of the program. And you know, kind of there's kind of this pre Flip-Nomberg era and this post-Flip-Nomberg era, and you know, we have great alums in both of those eras. I can't tell you how many emails and texts and Facebooks and everything that I was getting from all these guys that are, you know, telling me that they felt like they were part of it. And you know, when I got guys who graduated in 1999 or whatever, and they're exhausted after watching the game because they were cheering so hard or whatever. That's really special as a coach, and, you know, as an alumni of the program, I couldn't be more proud of that.
Coach is going back-to-back, and not just with championships, but undefeated seasons and matching Michigan's mark in 08-09. Is that on your radar at all?
You know, I know what we did was a pretty special thing. You know, I don't get too much into comparisons just because I think you keep any championship team at this level has been special in their own way. So for us, you know, we wanted to measure the success of the CSU team just on doing the best we could possibly do to be as good as we could possibly become. And you know, I wanted to overachieve. The last thing I wanted as a coach for this year was to underachieve, because I felt like we had the pieces in place that if we played, you know, at or above our potential, we were going to be a pretty special group. You know, being undefeated was never the goal. It just kind of came, you know, with the season. And, you know, we certainly had a couple of close calls. You know, by all accounts, we probably should have lost to Santa Barbara early on, down by 2 goals late in the fourth quarter to Chapman, and come back to take that to overtime. So, you know, it wasn't just completely smooth sailing, but we were lucky with this team that we were able to learn from our mistakes while still getting victories. And, you know, that's totally a testament to our 14 seniors and our captains and our leadership. And you know, they just weren't satisfied with being mediocre. And, you know, we talked about being great all year. And, you know, ultimately at the end, they were able to do that.
Alex, as many positives that there were that came out of this MCLA tournament, especially when it comes to the hard work of the players and coaches and, you know, their day on the field, you know, you went out there and tweeted after the first day of the tournament when things didn't really go so well as far as, you know, an entertainment and fan-player experience. You know, you put it out there. Players, coaches, and the officials are always held to the highest standards in the national tournament, and so should the MCLA leaders and organizers. You know, by all means, man, please elaborate.
Well, yeah, I don't want to get too down on the people. I know these are volunteers that are working hard to provide a great event and a great platform for us. And, you know, I just think it's an important thing for, you know, for all of us who are working so hard to get as much, you know, coverage and recognition as we can for that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's tough, you know, when you're that far away out in Greenville, 1,500 miles away from home here. And, you know, we had a lot of great parents who were able to travel, but a lot of parents who weren't. And, you know, you just feels like it feels like it should be kind of the top of the pyramid in terms of the MCLA. And, you know, you want to see that maximized as much as possible. So, you know, I know I'm not the only person who necessarily felt that way, and I definitely don't mean to demean or put down any of the efforts, because it's a tough job. You know, I've been involved with the Vail Lacrosse Shootout for a really long time, and I was involved with that. And I know, you know, it's a thankless job being a tournament organizer, and, you know, you'd like to positively move in a direction where we're, you know, given just improving. You know, we always want to improve our product, and ultimately that week, if that's what it is the crown jewel of the MCLA, that should be the week that everyone really is paying attention to us. And you know, we struggle so much with this club versus varsity kind of dynamic, and oh, it's just club, and you know, I think that's our opportunity to not be a club and to really be a legitimate kind of organization. And you know, I really know well and appreciate the efforts of everybody on the board, and you know, I think there's some positive steps we can take moving forward to make sure that that the week is a great week for everybody, and it serves to notice that we're a legitimate organization.
Well, Alex Smith, that's going to do it for this edition of the Inside Lacrosse MCLA podcast. Congratulations again for winning another national championship. Certainly the Rams have established a hell of a dynasty to carry the torch at the MCLA Division I level. Good luck as you guys rebuild, reload, and regroup heading into 2014. And as I said to Coach Moose about 15 minutes ago, maybe this time next year, same time, same sandbox.
Yeah, it'd be great. I think we're it's going to be a different looking CSU team, and I know a lot of teams are going to be saying they're going to be aiming for us. But the fact is, we're going to be a brand new team next year, and I'm excited to see what that looks like. It's going to be a whole new challenge. Thanks a lot, guys.
Inside the Cross Podcast.